Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, here we are in the holidays, in the midst of it. They're piping the music in to the MARTA stations like it's some sort of vaccine that's going to protect us.
Simply having a wonderful Christmas time.
Yeah, that one makes me suicidal.
7
in the morning, and, you know, you're trying to listen to your own music or get stuck in your own book. At any rate, it's not even December yet, and I'm, you know, I'm already.
Well, I understand the train station is killing your eardrums with Christmas music.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I mean, the big thing about Christmas, of course, is the gift giving, right? Christmas, the holidays, the whole whatever you're calling your winter gift giving shenanigans. It generally relates to taking something in a box, wrapping it up, sticking it in a bag, creating this air of mystery, right? What's inside it? What could it be? And people get excited about it, right?
Right.
So in this podcast, we're basically advocating give the gift of an empty box.
Well, okay, maybe not necessarily an empty box. And we'll talk about this because maybe you could fill this box with ideas, thoughts. And present it as a present. I'm sure that will go over really well.
Especially with the kids. I mean, they're so cheap.
Yeah.
I drew my Uncle Craig in the gift raffle this year. So I think I'm going to give him some like a box of ideas. And we'll see how that plays out.
I think he's going to love it. And I think that you should, if he doesn't understand it, he's going to have to listen to this podcast. So he can really appreciate that sometimes one of the biggest gifts is a mystery, right?
Right.
And we can't help but get really excited about a mystery, about what might be inside of a box. And sometimes we approach it, we unwrap it with gusto, and sometimes we shy away. And so we're going to talk about that in various forms today.
Right, because that is what is always fascinating about a gift box or a mystery box. It's the mystery. It's not, oh, I want to tear into that thing and get what's in it. And granted, we sort of lose track of that, I think, sometimes with our gift giving with the use of, say, like an Amazon gift list and all this, because it's so regimented. It's like, these are the things I want. These are the things you may give me. Please check them off. And then, you know, people are cheating anyway and seeing.
There's no mystery there.
You know, seeing what they're going to get ahead of time. But mystery boxes in general. We were chatting about this. We each have like a few different stories that relate to mystery boxes in our own life. Will you talk a little about the art in your house and at your desk?
Yeah, we have in our house, we have a giant painting, and it's an abstract, and it sort of looks like it could be maybe like an advertising, like a pole or something that has like a little advertisement on it. And on top of that is an envelope that has been attached to this painting, and it is sealed. And there's no way you could remove it without absolutely destroying the painting. Or if you open it, you would destroy the painting.
So it is a part of the work. It's not merely something that says like, hey guys, hope you enjoy the piece I made for you.
Yeah, here's a receipt for the painting, suckers. But no, this was actually something that was given to us by a friend, and we traded out some artwork. And so, of course, Jeff will never tell us what is inside that envelope. But as you can see, if you look at it, actually, you can see the corners of the envelope have been played with enough that they've been kind of turned up. And so it drives everybody crazy, particularly my father-in-law. He wants to know what is in that envelope. And I'm pretty sure he's probably tried to steam it open before, too, when we haven't been home. But it does drive people nuts because there's this idea that maybe it could contain the secrets of the world. Or maybe it would, I mean, at the very least, just have something really interesting to say.
Right, because it contains basically anything in the world until you open it. It could
exactly.
have anything,
it has
right?
all the possibilities in the world until you open it, right? But could it be a Pandora's box? Could all the ills of the world fly out of that envelope?
And then they can never be stuffed back in.
They can never be stuffed back in. All the demons are out there. And then the other thing that you mentioned is a little postcard that I have, or a couple of them, at my cubicle, and it's a scratch off, like sort of like a I guess what you call a
like a lottery ticket.
Yeah, a lottery ticket. And there's a woman in a beautiful dress, and she's got a big round scratch off over her head that you could scratch off and see what's underneath. But I refuse to.
Huh.
I want the mystery.
Now, did you place them on there, or did they come?
They came that way. Okay. Yeah.
Because. Every time I walk by your desk, I see those, and there is a temptation. Like, what's going on under there?
Yeah.
Like, what is going on with that lady? Or in one of them, a llama or something?
Yeah, there's a llama too. Yeah.
Does a llama have a head? Is its head missing? I don't know.
I know. Is it a monkey underneath the llama? And by the way, you've just revealed yourself. If I ever find them scratched, I know exactly who did it.
Oh, well, I mean, it's really a miracle that nobody has scratched it. Cause I brought a model airplane to work, and it's been broken twice by mysterious hands.
Yeah,
so
but that's
how come because, these mysterious hands are not going after your art?
Because that whatever like sort of gremlin we have is interested in model airplanes and not art. So anyway, those are some examples. And then you have an example of a mystery box.
Oh, yes. I have a really good one. This is a story. I haven't actually told this one a lot, but it's such a good story. So now I will share it with the world. Back when I was like in junior high, my family went to this Southern Baptist church, and they were big on the whole wait till you're married to have sex. And if you've had sex already, you know, as a junior high kid or a high school kid, you need a sort of regain your virginity, like sort of a new replacement virginity can be bestowed upon you, and you then keep that one intact until such time as you're married in the eyes of God and all that. So a part of this campaign, if you will, we were all issued a little box that was wrapped in gift paper. It was the size of a cassette tape. For those of you who remember cassette tapes, the little plastic case that it comes in, it was that size.
Yeah.
And indeed, if you pressed on it and sort of felt the package, you could tell that it was in fact a cassette box that was wrapped up.
Okay. But it's sealed, right?
But it's sealed. Yeah. And then of course the big question is what's inside that box. Now obviously
what is the purpose of this box? Why do they give
it to you? This box is supposed to represent your virginity, the special gift that God has bestowed upon you. And you were supposed to keep it and treasure it. And you're not supposed to unwrap it until such time as...
So when you make love and the Holy Spirit then visits you, you're able to unwrap this.
Yeah, basically. So they were like, here you go.
Of course, after you've been married,
Yeah, this is a reminder, you know, and it's like a metaphor and all. So I ended up sticking this package away for a long time because, as it turns out, I didn't actually have to open it until I was into my 20s, which is no big deal if you're, if any of you kids listening right now and you feel like some sort of weird pressure to go out there and have some sex, let me just tell you, it's not that big a deal. So just, chill out. It'll all make a lot more sense later. But so I'm in my 20s and I'm doing whatever. And then I realize, hey, this thing happened the other week, so now technically I can open that package and I won't be cheating. Because I imagine some of the kids took it home and like opened it immediately because they were like, oh, I wonder what this is, what's inside this that I'm supposed to have.
You weren't married, right? Like, you didn't...
Well, no.
Okay, I just wanted... Because you heard... I'm just saying, like, you're this... You know, this was the idea,
no,
but...
No, no, no. Yeah, I didn't... It was... there were other causes for me not opening that package till I was in my 20s.
Right. So, but I'm saying, though, that it's not like you waited and you were like, oh, okay.
No, no.
You just happened to be like, oh, here's just, there's that package.
Right. It just ended up not happening in my life until I was at that, you know, at this particular age. And then I realized, hey, I've got that package. And so the next time I came home and I went through a box of my old stuff and I found it and I'm like, all right, I'm going to go ahead and open this up.
Okay.
See what this was all about. Because I was kind of superstitious about it before. I was like, well, if I open it too early, what if that jinxes me for life? And then, you know,
even though you don't subscribe to any of this
anymore.
Even
though I don't subscribe to it, you know,
okay.
And then I was also thinking, like, what if there's like this nasty note in it that it's like, that's from my youth pastor. And he's like, wow, you really screwed up there, buddy. Or way to throw away your precious gift. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
So I open it up and the box is empty. There's nothing inside it. Like, there's not a note saying,
I'm shaking my head now.
God bless, or a note saying, I hope you did the right thing, or, you know, a prize, a gift certificate.
I think that's really sad because that to me is just laziness. Because, or I would think that the church thought so little of the kids' ability to retain their virginity that they are like, you know what, this is not going to happen anyway. Let's not fill it with anything.
Well, it would have also been bad if they'd filled it with something perishable, like, some candy or something.
Because
then I'm like, wow, they had no faith in us at all. They were like, just go ahead and put, you know, the expiration date is next month. They're probably going to open it tonight. Might as well have a treat in there to keep them busy.
And see, so you were disappointed because all of the possibilities ceased to exist, right?
I don't know if I was disappointed. It was just more kind of fascinating. Like, why didn't they put something in there? Was it intentional? I tend to think that probably they were just pressed for time. And they wanted to do something.
Still, but like a Far Side cartoon, they could have thrown in anything.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a fortune cookie, whatchamacallit, the little slip of paper.
Yeah, I don't know.
With your lottery numbers on it.
I don't know. I wasn't disappointed, and I certainly wasn't like, oh, I wish I had opened this ages ago, literally or figuratively. But yeah, it just shows you, though, how the idea of something in a package can sort of captivate your mind for years and years on end.
Well, okay, so let's talk about...
Wait, one more story.
Oh, okay.
Ben Bolin gave me a special gift the other day.
Oh, that's right. Ben Bolin of Stuff They Don't Want You to Know.
Yeah. And by a special gift, I mean he gave me a package, not his virginity. But it was... and I didn't know it was from him at the time. But I came into work and there was a package and it said, mystery, gift... You can choose to open it, keep it, or throw it away, or cross out your name and give it to someone else.
And it says, a mystery package arrives. What do you do?
And I shared this on the Facebook, and we had different answers. Some people were like, throw it away, give it away, open it now, I must see what's inside it.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out it was a book that we had been talking about. But it really captivated my imagination.
It will psychologically. I think that everybody was like, what could it be? Could it be something for good or ill will? Which is essentially what every box presented to you is, right?
And is it a test? I was kind of getting shadows of the virginity box there because I'm like, am I meant to open this? Am I meant to give it to someone else? So I ended up actually crossing out my name, putting yours on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you were scared to death of it.
Well, I was like, wait, thanks, Lamb. So then I took it to someone else, and then we crossed it out, and then back to you.
Back to me. So it was meant to be, and it was a book, the Illuminati Trilogy. So there we go.
Which, lovely thing for Ben Bolin to do,
yes,
I gotta say.
Yes. Ben, thanks, if you're listening.
Yeah. So, okay, let's talk about when you receive a box that you don't want, and let's say that your name is Enzo Montagna. And you live in Genoa, Italy, and you're a port worker who specializes in radiation detection.
Ah, this is the story. I believe this was on Wired about the radioactive cargo container.
Yeah.
Shows up, don't know what's inside it, but we know that whatever is inside it is radioactive.
Yeah, like basically it's just another day, another thousand of these things a day coming in to this one particular port.
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually a pretty sobering statistic, by the way, because if you think about it, there are millions and millions of these shipping containers and cargo containers going around the world. So here's this one port, 1,000 a day. Enzo shows up, turns on his radiation detector, and the thing goes nuts. In fact, it goes off the charts. And he hasn't even, like, gone into the area to actually try to do his security check. So turns out that there is something inside of it, obviously, that is highly radioactive, and they think that it could be a dirty bomb, and they freak out. And they move it away as far as possible. In the meantime, it languishes on that dock for almost a year.
Whoa.
Yeah, because they're trying to figure out who is going to pay for it. Can we get it? Can we, where did it come from? Can we ship it back? Saudi Arabia from whence it originated was like, no way. No, thank you. And you know, and these things are really hard to track.
Yeah.
Right?
And what does it contain? Is it some sort of nefarious device? Is it just waste material? Is it the Ark of the Covenant?
But exactly, yeah. Exactly. And it is actually tagged as waste material. There's a picture of the inside. But of course, when you're looking at all these copper coils, you know, 22 tons of copper coils, something obviously could be put in there and you would never discover it. So anyway, sat there for a long time until they finally got a robot to go in and they used some cameras and they figured out that it was a chunk of cobalt.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which was even odder because, you know, this is not some sort of material that you find every day. In fact, I believe that it came from, or at least they're thinking that it came from, some sort of medical device or a machine used to sterilize food. And it's really expensive to dispose of this sort of thing. But apparently this is just not all that odd that you would have shipping, containers with nefarious, things inside of it. In fact, that Wired.com, the article, "Why is this cargo container emitting so much radiation?" said that there was this one guy who they found, and this was just 6 weeks after 9/11, by the way. They found him inside of one of the shipping containers because they heard noise and they opened it up. And lo and behold, they found that this guy was hanging out in there with a satellite phone, a cell phone, a laptop, cameras, maps, security passes to airports in Canada, Thailand, and Egypt. And the container was outfitted with a bed, a water supply, a heater, and a toilet.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, and, you know, okay, it was a little bit odd, right, don't you think?
Well, I don't know. I've seen some magazine articles where dudes take a cargo container and transform it into an upscale apartment.
Right. But he was not, you know, some sort of model for Dwell magazine.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Saying, oh, look at my great postmodern home here. They actually nicknamed him Container Bob, and the guy posted bail in Italian court. It was never seen again.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, and there's been a lot of talk actually about the security of shipping containers. And so that remains a pretty big problem, or, you know, I guess you would say a blind spot in security.
Right. And of course, we don't have to dwell much on this, but obviously there are tons of, like, the big show today on multiple networks is the whole, antiquers and, these people checking out abandoned, yeah. storage facilities, where they auction off the contents of abandoned, storage, facilities.
Well, especially in this economy where people are no longer able to pay for them too.
Right. Yeah. And so they're mostly filled with nothing anyway.
Yeah.
But there's always that chance and people get really into that idea because they don't say, all right, everybody go in here and check it out and see if there's anything you want to buy. Mm-hmm. They're like, we're going to sell everything. You buy everything or nothing. You keep everything or nothing and you just get a peek.
Right.
So that's a great example of people that are just captivated by the possibility that amidst of all that junk and leftover material from somebody's life and somebody's sob story, there's going to be something valuable.
I have read that mostly what people find are like stacks of porn. I'm not kidding.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. And you know, maybe there's some vintage porn in there that you could sell on eBay. I don't know, but yeah, most of the time it's not anything that's very exciting. It's not like you get like Hannibal Lecter's storage unit. You get a vintage car and a severed head.
I was thinking of Silence of the Lambs too, because it's not Hannibal's, but like somebody else's, and they have somebody that knew Hannibal, right?
Yeah.
And there's like a head in a jar or something. So,
you're right. It was Ruskin or something, one of his patients.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I think that was his name. I don't know why I remember that. But in a moment here, we are going to talk about humans as mystery boxes.
And, yes. And we'll get a little more into the science and not just amusing tales.
That's right. People in containers.
This podcast is brought to you by Intel, the sponsors of tomorrow, and the Discovery Channel. At Intel, we believe curiosity is the spark which drives innovation. Join us at curiosity.com and explore the answers to life's questions.
All right, we're back. Let's open this up and see what's inside it here.
All right, so before we get to humans, we're going to have to talk about cats, specifically
yes.
a cat in a box.
Yes, and this was one that I think most of our listeners are going to be familiar with, and that is, of course, Schrodinger's cat.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to dive too deep into the quantum physics here because essentially this is a thought experiment,
mm-hmm.
and it has to do with the Copenhagen interpretation.
Of uncertainty.
Of uncertainty, yeah. That was first proposed by Bohr in 1920, and it says that a quantum particle doesn't exist in one state or another, but in all of its possible states at once. It's only when we observe its state that a quantum particle is essentially forced to choose one probability, and that's the state that we observe. All right. So,
yeah. So it's essentially a lesson in uncertainty in particle physics
right.
in the quantum world.
Right. So here comes Schrodinger in 1935.
Austrian physicist.
Right. And he puts together a thought experiment. Like thought experiments are often really useful to illustrate a point and to mm-hmm. make something that's a little, hard to grasp, a little more concrete.
Right. And the point of a thought of an experiment is not to have a solution per se, right?
No, yeah. Nor to kill cats, but to just right. sort of make you think about it.
Right.
So, in his experiment, he puts a cat in a box along with a bit of, radioactive material.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're talking about with this radioactive, container. And a Geiger counter, all right? Which is a device that measures radiation, of course. So the Geiger counter is designed so that if it senses the decay of the radioactive material, and all radioactive material decays, it triggers a hammer, which then breaks a flask that contains acid or poison. There are different versions of this, but basically, mm-hmm. if this radioactive element decays, it triggers something that kills the cat.
Right.
And so if you were to open that box, that the particles are going to have to be in one state or the other.
Mm-hmm.
The cat is going to be alive or dead. There's no in between. It's going to be one or the other. Either that cat has been poisoned, hit with the hammer, whatever, had acid poured on it, or it's fine and just maybe a little ticked off that you put it in a thought experiment box.
But it's unknowable. I mean, essentially it's unknowable, and you have to sort of accept that this cat is in both states, right?
Right. And don't overthink it. You can't listen for the meowing.
Yeah.
Or the scratch.
And if you start thinking about the hammer thing and the radioactive decay, just sort of imagine Schrodinger as a sort of like a peewee of the physicist, like
right.
creating these little contraptions.
Yeah, and he also knew that the more thought he put into he also realized that the more thought he put into how the cat actually dies, the creepier it would be. So
right. And again, no cat died. This was just a thought experiment.
Right.
But the reason why we're talking about it is that you could give a sort of alternative reading about whether or not this really applies to us in how we perceive reality.
Right. Because the cat in this situation is in a quantum state.
Mm-hmm.
It is both dead and alive. But is in both states at once until we open the box and by perceiving it, change it.
So there's this question, consciousness of reality, right?
Right.
Is there an actual consciousness of reality? Does it only exist until we begin to think about it? Or is there just no material reality whatsoever? You know what I'm talking about here. So
yeah.
in terms of like, okay, are we all just linked to the cat in the box? We're both dead and alive. We're both unconscious and conscious.
Right.
Until we begin to really speculate about life and sort of peel back the layers and begin to investigate what
yeah.
it means to be alive or what it means to even be part of this physical world.
Yeah. Does Spain exist if you don't know about it? That kind of thing?
Exactly.
Does a tree make a sound in the forest?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
There's no one there to hear it? All that, you know, That's one of the reasons that the Schrodinger's cat is so endearing. Well, I don't know if endearing is the word.
I think it's maddening
at the same time,
right?
It's such good, such a good cognitive chew toy for everyone because it gets down to a lot of really, mind-rending, philosophical pondering about the state of reality.
So you sent me this link to this guy named Scott Aronson.
Yes.
And he sort of takes this idea, not wholesale, but he applies it to us as automatons, right?
Right. Yeah, this guy, Scott Aronson, came up with this notion presented at this lecture. And it's basically a Turing test for free will. A Turing test being something that, I aimed to gauge the intelligence of a machine, mm-hmm. to see if machines can think on the same level as humans.
Right.
It's also been used in a lot of sci-fi, Blade Runner and all that.
But. Yeah, and the main question that Turing asked was, can machines think? Right? This
mm-hmm.
was
yeah.
the initial question. And then he sort of threw that out and said, you know what, that's not even the question. The question is, you know, are there imaginable digital computers which would do well in the imitation game?
Right. Right, like he basically redefined the question in terms that it could be actually examined a little closer and tested.
Right.
So Aronson is dealing with a similar question, but he's interested about free will.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and it also involves super smart computers.
And that's what, when we say super smart computers, that's what we're talking about, the imitation game, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So what does this test consist of? Okay, on the surface, it basically means. Somebody would hand you an envelope.
Okay.
Probably a robot would hand you an envelope.
Like ours?
Right. And it would tell you, the idea would be if you open this envelope, it'll tell you what you're thinking or saying or doing at a particular point in the future.
Okay.
It would be like that. It would be like the virginity box if I opened it however many years later and found a note inside that told me exactly where I lost my virginity and how and to whom.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So then with that.
And that would be like, whoa. How did a machine know that ahead of time? Clearly, if I'm that predictable, if I'm that kind of a system that can, you know, it's like weather, right? We build these computer models of weather and atmospheric systems to try and figure out what they're going to do in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And we can only do that with a limited amount of success, with only so much accuracy. So.
But you have data that can continue to bring you back into a more accurate system, right?
Right. So what if we dipped into something like the Blue Brain Project, you know, the idea of building a working copy, a digital copy of the human mind?
Mm-hmm.
What if a supercomputer was able to build a copy of your mind, and then by analyzing that copy, that mathematical model of you, and then they could accurately plan out the rest of your life or anything you could conceivably do, say, or think? And then tell you, make up this note, print it out, hand it to you and say, open this next Thursday and it'll tell you what you did next Wednesday.
And this is what Aronson is saying, that you could do this in a couple of ways. Like you could continue to do some sort of trial and error process where you sort of get the landscape of someone's brain by asking someone a ton of questions and then build a model of predictability based upon that, right?
Right.
Or you could do something like the Blue Brain Project, which is reverse engineering the brain by building a detailed, realistic computer model of the human brain, and it's 100 trillion synapses. So then you have this other system that is analyzing the way that you think, how your synapses are firing, and what they're responding to. So. Yeah, essentially what Aronson is saying, what is so interesting is he's saying, you know, maybe there's not free will.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there is a certain amount of unpredictability, but it's finite, right? It's almost like the cat in the box. There are only two choices. There is a factor of unpredictability there because it's either dead or alive, but it's still, you know, just these one of two things.
Right.
Right. So through trial and error there, you're going to predict or accurately predict eventually what's happening with this cat.
Right.
And I'm not saying that's what's going to happen in quantum physics, but in terms of how we begin to really think about technology and how it's interacting with us at a meaningful level as we go forward, it does sort of beg the question even more about free will. And we've talked about it many times before, but this is certainly an interesting proposition that we're pretty predictable.
Yeah, and it comes down to, we keep coming back to this idea of at what point does science demystify the human experience, and then how do we relate to that? And then it tends to divide into two basic camps. Either it's terrifying or it's liberating.
Yeah.
Like the idea that there's no free will, it either means great, there's something in charge where I don't have to worry about it. There's not. You know, I don't have to get bent out of shape over choices because ultimately there are no choices. Or that's ultimately really damning because you're thinking there's no choice in life. I'm just this automaton mindlessly following its programs, making the same mistakes over and over again, doing the same stuff, and there's no changing it.
And that's why mysteries becomes really important again, right?
Yeah.
Because sometimes that's even more important than the actual knowledge, because that's how you get to the heart of it.
Yeah. I actually, in researching this, I found a book called, and bear with me, the title here is The Triumph of God Over Evil, by William Hasker of the University of Edinburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually an interesting looking book. If anybody would like to read like a whole thick book about the theology and philosophy.
This is a comedy, right?
I think there's a little humor in there, but mostly it's like, it's Hasker getting really philosophical
mm-hmm.
about what is the nature of free will? How does it factor into the belief in God, the belief in evil? You know, getting into some of the old questions about why would God allow evil to exist? And
mm-hmm.
basically he sets out to justify the ways of God to man, which always works well for authors. But it looks like an interesting book, so if you're into that, check it out. But he was actually asking the same question with the same sort of thought experiment.
Uh-huh.
Imagine somebody handed you an envelope, and you opened it up, and it told you what you just thought or said or did. And he predicted that pretty much anybody would be frustrated, angry, and resentful upon opening that envelope, even if you agreed with everything it said. And there's a good chance you would not be happy with what it said anyway. But even if you were perfectly fine, you were like, yeah, that's me to a T, you probably wouldn't be particularly pleased.
Well, no, because, I mean, we all want to believe that we're unique. And essentially, I do think that we are. But certainly, there are some things about humans that are predictable and not so unique. Which, of course, is going to bring me to J.J. Abrams.
Yes, yeah. Of course, the mystery box thing... it really blew up when he did that on the internet, because he did that TED Talk
mm-hmm.
Like a year ago, maybe.
Yeah.
No, it was more, because I don't think Lost had finished.
Oh, 2009 at the end.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and basically he was talking about, well, he was doing a lot of talking, and it was a little rambly even for me. And, you know, Lord knows I don't have a lot of room to talk. But basically his whole point was the idea of the mystery box is so inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking about getting this mystery package from a magic store in mm-hmm. New York, I believe. And you know, it's one of these, like, you pay a certain amount. It's probably just got some, you know, some garbage in it from the magic shop, some stuff
right.
they couldn't move. And so they just packaged it up in this and sold it. But, you know,
it's like the Archie McPhee mystery bag. If
right.
anybody knows about Archie McPhee.
Who is Archie McPhee?
It's an online, emporium of all things silly.
Oh.
And you can get, you know, bacon breath mints, so on and so forth.
Ah, gotcha,
yeah.
gotcha. So his whole TED Talk, which you can find easily online, TED Talk J.J. Abrams in Google search, he makes the argument that the idea of the mystery box is what stirs human creativity, and what really certainly his own creativity
mm-hmm.
and really motivates him to create.
And you actually sent me a really interesting PDF about curiosity as a memory enhancer, right? So
yeah.
there's this idea that
it's not just J.A.J. Abrams talking about how great it is.
There's actually
some research to back it
yeah,
up.
Yeah, that you know, this mystery has to be unraveled, and our brains, again, like you said, needs a good chew toy, which really helps us to learn better and to get our noggins engaged.
Yeah, this particular study was from the California Institute of Technology, and they did some fMRIs on people when they there were a couple of different like phases of this experiment, but people, while they were reading trivia questions, creating a mixture of high and low creativity, they measured subjects' pupil dilation and tested their memory recall, and the fMRI showed that curiosity increases activity in memory areas such as the parahippocampal gyrus and the left inferior frontal gyrus when subjects guess incorrectly, which suggests that curiosity may enhance memory for new information.
And it's funny, too. I was thinking about that yesterday. I was working from a coffee shop, and there was a French tutor with her two students.
Mm-hmm.
And they were kind of like scraggly, I don't know, maybe like 13-year-old boys. And
you were working in like a Madeleine children's book yesterday?
Yes, I was. I was in Paris, yeah. And there was a gypsy in the corner that was going to kidnap us all. But before that, there was a French lesson, and you could tell the guys were kind of bored. And I remember thinking to myself, if they had this context of like, okay, this phrase, this sort of rote phrase of like, how are you doing today? I love this artwork here. You know, these sort of things, it might be so much more interesting if their curiosity was piqued, if their imagination was engaged, if they might think that the person that they were talking to could be, you know, Stephen Hawking or a pretty girl
mm-hmm.
or an attractive boy. I don't know. Like, you know, there are different ways I think that we can play with the blueprint of our mind in the way that we acquire knowledge. And I thought that was so interesting that the curiosity about something really does help this flicker of our flame of memory. And I don't know. It was exciting to me. I wanted to share that with them, but I thought better of it.
Yeah. Well,
you agree with that.
I agree.
Yeah.
So yeah, mystery boxes. I mean, I'm not going to completely argue that people should give empty boxes
and
it will totally go off the gift registry for things. I don't know. There's something to be said for giving somebody the gift of a mystery now and again.
Okay. And so if you really do want to give a gift of a mystery, you actually want to put something in that box. I do have a suggestion. It is a book called How to Be an Explorer of the World, Portable Art Museum by Carrie Smith. And I recommend it only because there are all sorts of very interesting thought experiments in it that I think piques a person's curiosity about the physical world, the emotional world, and how to sort of shift your paradox a bit. So if anybody's interested in that and they know someone who might appreciate it, that's my recommendation.
All right. Well, speaking of mystery boxes, let's call over the robot and see if we have a quick listener mail to read here.
We should really name this robot one day.
Yeah, what is he, she look like to you?
Arnold Schwarzenegger. Just call it Arnie.
Arnie.
Yeah.
All right, let's see. Opening the folder now. Ah, here's one from, this is apt. We heard from somebody, normally I only read the first name, but I'll just say this individual's last name. It's apparently Christmas. So Christmas writes this and says, "Hi guys, love your show. I studied fine art once and came across an article which contested that separation anxiety in infants is basically the source of all creative activity in humans. This includes religion. The idea went something like this. As we realize that we are not the center of our own universe, that our mother is some significant entity, we cope with this trauma by projecting onto things like dolls and teddy bears. This objectification extrapolates to our belief in deities. I cannot remember who wrote this article, and I probably haven't explained it very well, but I was hoping you might have heard of something like this. Keep up the great work. I am new to podcasts, and I try to tell as many of my friends about HSW as I can."
HSW being How Stuff Works?
Yes.
Right.
We also say, or I catch people, and I catch myself saying HSW around the office, even though it's exactly the same number of syllables as How Stuff Works.
I know, but I kind of like it because I feel like we need to have, like, HSWU, like, university.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds very, like, university-like.
Yeah.
I give it to HSWU.
The idea that Christmas brings up here is, I believe we actually, he's new to the podcast, so we may not have run across this yet, but I know we've touched on the idea of like, where does the idea of God come from?
Mm-hmm.
And where does the idea of the soul come from?
I know. Is it hardwired in our brains?
Right, yeah. Right. Like the cyber immortality episode that we did.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we did touch on some of that.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to sort of follow the roots of something like that and try and figure out where does that actually come from. And we also have talked about creativity in the brain as just something that we've evolved to do. Neuroplasticity, the idea that we live in this, again, in this world of fixed and movable objects, and we have to navigate it, and creativity is part of that navigation system.
Right. Neuroplasticity meaning that we can change our brains to a certain degree. It's far, actually much more plastic than we thought before, right? Much more flexible our brains are. And in terms of creativity, again, thought experiments. This is a key element if you want to try to ramp up.
So there you
creativity.
Go. A little more in the free will exists pile.
The non-exists.
A positive note.
Right, yeah. Right, yeah.
So, hey, if you want to share something with us, be it your own mystery gift-giving ideas or something just related to the idea of mystery boxes and our own perception of reality, drop by the Facebook. You can find us on there as Stuff to Blow the Mind, or you can find us on Twitter as well if we're
Be sure to check out
there.
Our new video
and
podcast, Stuff
the
from
line
the Future.
Blow the mind.
Join How Stuff Works staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch Stratacoaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.